boundless. I vow to study them, the enlightened way is incomparable. I vow to embody it, sentient beings are numberless. I vow to free them, delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to transform them, practice paths are boundless. I vow to study them, the enlightened way is incomparable. I vow to embody it.
So you may have noticed my hands shake a little bit. So it's usually something I try to hide. A lot of times when I do public speaking, I stand with my hands behind my back. Got a few other strategies. My favorite is this rubber ball. If I keep it in my hands and squeeze it, then my hands don't shake so much. So usually that's something I try to hide, but since this is my first time down here, I thought I'd just talk about it. So what's going on is apparently I have Parkinson's. And I say apparently because there's no like definitive test. You know, the doctors are like 99.99% sure, but there's no definitive test of it. So if you're not familiar with Parkinson's, it's a movement disorder, it's neurological. The bad news is it's progressive, so it only gets worse. And there's no known cure for it. The good news is it's progressing very slowly, and there's medications that I can take that alleviate the symptoms. So I'm not here to talk about Parkinson's itself. What I'm here to talk about is working with it, like dealing with something like Parkinson's, and the challenges it presents. So we just did the four vows of the Bodhisattva. There's one line in there, which is, practice paths are boundless, I vow to study them. So I take that to mean like everything is a practice path. Everything you do in life, including Parkinson's. So it's not a practice path that I chose, but it's one that I've been given. And my choice in this is I can either deal with it skillfully and gracefully, or not so skillfully and gracefully. So I think that's what the relevance is for you guys. Somewhere in your daily life, there's something for each one of you that's your edge. You know, it might be a chronic illness, might be an addiction, might be a really tough relationship, but there's something out there that really tests your sanity and your ability to cope. So whatever it is, you've got a choice. You can work with that skillfully or not so skillfully. So hopefully my experience with Parkinson's will help you. So first symptom I had was around 2009. I went to see my family doctor, and she noticed just a little bit of a tremor, so she sent me to a neurologist. He poked and prodded for a while, and then he said, well, it could be this, it could be that, but look, I think you've got Parkinson's. So that was like a surreal moment. It was like a dead silence in the room. I could hear the clock ticking on the wall. I thought, man, who are you talking to? Is this somebody walking down the hall that you said that to? Talking to me? I've got Parkinson's? So at that point, I called on all my inner reserves, and I did the things I do best. I dissociated and went into a state of denial. And for a while, that worked. But it came with a cost. And the cost was like a low level of anxiety that was just with me all the time. So as the symptoms got worse, the denial got to be harder to maintain. And that low level of anxiety started to shift, and it finally became panic attacks. And I don't know if any of you have had panic attacks, but it's an amazing experience. It's an experience I hope to never have again. So when I discovered that I couldn't run away from the problem, I realized the only other option was to turn and face it. And that was more of a process than just a single event. So the first thing I did was I got angry. You know, like, I don't deserve this, it isn't fair. So it turns out we happen to live on the ocean up in Melbourne. So I would go down to the ocean and just scream at the top of my lungs to the ocean. It's really a useful thing to do. I mean, it really kind of unloaded a lot. So I kind of burned through that, then I tried bargaining, you know, bargaining with God. So, like, get rid of the Parkinson's and I'll join the church choir. But I think God had heard me sing. So, it's no deal. So when I got past that, I just got depressed and cried. Finally, I got to the spot where I accepted reality. And that reality wasn't like a diagnosis of Parkinson's. The reality that I accepted was my own impermanence. The fact that I actually am going to die. I've known that my whole life. I've known it like an intellectual level. Of course, we're all going to die. But this was different. This is kind of knowing it at the level of experience, knowing that it was a reality. It was actually my reality. And that in a lot of ways, I'm going to be very lucky. That is, we're all going to die, and if we're lucky, we're going to grow old and feeble first. And it looks like it's still on the cards for me. So, to get to that spot, I had to do more than just read about impermanence. I had to actually experience it. And that was, I did that by going through this process of grieving. And it was grieving for something that I actually never had, which was grieving the loss of a forever young body. And like, none of us has that. So there's a couple of things I learned from that. One was this lesson in impermanence. But also, I saw that the suffering that I was experiencing wasn't from Parkinson's. Now, the fact is, Parkinson's hasn't been that bad. You know, it's like an inconvenience, but it certainly hasn't been debilitating. The suffering that I was experiencing was coming from all the drama that I had created around Parkinson's. It's something that I actually did to myself. It's like wishing that reality was different than it actually is. So, you know, I can see this all now in retrospect. It was a little bit harder to see it back at the time that it was happening. And if I'd been a little more enlightened at the time, maybe the suffering would have been a little less. And if I'd been less enlightened, maybe it'd be a little bit more. But I think as long as I hadn't appreciated the impermanence of my own body, there was going to be some suffering in I was going to have to go through this grieving process of, you know, accepting that I was going to lose my young body and it's going to be replaced by this, you know, kind of an old deteriorating body. So those were two clear lessons that I got out of Parkinson's. One is the truth of impermanence, and the other is that this suffering comes from my reaction to a situation, not the situation itself. And those would be two pretty good lessons, but Parkinson is a gift that keeps on giving. It's actually informed my practice here in Zen, particularly around meditation. So one thing with these tremors is that they're really sensitive to stress. Like right now, just being in front of you guys is just enough little extra stress that it makes my hands kind of move around. So it's like another good motivator to meditate. And meditation, of course, is highly recommended to people that have, I think, any neurological disease. Second thing is the tremors are like a feedback loop. So this is like my built-in stressometer. At any point, I want to know how much stress I'm experiencing. I just look at my right hand, and it tells tells me exactly how much stress I'm experiencing. And that stressometer is informed by practice of meditation. So a lot of times in meditation, we come to a single point of concentration. You know, it might be focus on the breath or focus on a mantra. Or back when I was a teenager, it would be focus on a burning candle. Now that's like helpful. But even more helpful is the meditation practice where you don't have the single point of awareness, where it's like the soft focus, where you just let experience rise and kind of fall away. In Zen, it's called shikantaza. And that seems to bring a much greater sense of calm to me than the single point of awareness. And even more fundamentally, Parkinson's has changed my whole notion of what it means to be enlightened. So for most of my life, I kind of sacrificed my appreciation for this moment in return for a future moment that was going to be even better. That future moment would occur when I got my next promotion at work, or I got my next graduate degree, or when I completed psychotherapy and somebody certified me a saint. Or maybe the most insidious of all would be when I become enlightened. So this kind of new experience with shikantaza had an unexpected consequence, which was the future just appears less certain, and in some ways maybe less attractive. And as that happened, my focus and interest just naturally rearrange itself to come into the present. So all of the incessant striving that I was doing, striving to be enlightened, just felt ridiculous. And it started feeling like being a little rat on a treadmill where the piece of cheese is, you know, just always slightly out of reach. And you can run faster and harder, but the piece of cheese is still just a little bit away from you. And striving for enlightenment felt like reaching out, trying to grasp at something, when in fact my body was telling me to do just the reverse. It was to just let go, surrender, you know, accept what is and sink into the beingness of this moment. So the more present I've become, like the more I've come to appreciate this moment, like this moment right now, being with you guys. And the more that I appreciate it, the more present I become. It's like a symbiotic relationship that goes on between the two. And I think the reverse happens as well. When I'm not appreciating the moment, I slide into a state of dissociation. And when I'm in dissociation, I'm not appreciating the moment. So that's been my experience with Parkinson's. Everybody has their own experience, and I'm sure some of those have been different. I have no doubt that other things are going to come up in my life that'll be the new wedge. That'll be my new practice. And I realize that as I'm sitting here talking, maybe I'm making Parkinson sound pretty good. So some of you guys might be wondering, you know, my spiritual practice, how can I get some of this Parkinson? So here's what I suggest. A diet rich in herbicides and pesticides. Exposure to toxic industrial chemicals. Take up a sport that involves repeated blows to the head. This is all stuff that worked for me, and I'm sure it can work for you as well. So I'll just conclude by saying, you know, if I could get rid of this disease, I'd do it in a second. But if it meant going back to being the person person that I was before, no deal. Wow.
Thank you.
So I've forgotten how you handle questions.
So I was explaining, Mike arrived
At the very end of our Zazen Kai, we did a full day of meditation yesterday and got a little bit lost because he went to a different 3512 Tamiami Trail, but found his way here, and we had a wonderful evening. We spent some time together, and I was explaining to him our way of engaging in Dharma discussions. So for those of you that are not familiar with this process, if you would like to speak or ask a question or make a comment, we place our palms together and Mike would then acknowledge that person. And when you're finished speaking, also place your palms together. I'll go first. So thank you. It's so great to have you here. I was wanting to hear more about, I've never heard Shiken Taza described as a more accessible, or I would like to hear more about your understanding of Shiken Taza as you said, a more calming or softer practice.
I just noticed that when I practice with this, like the open awareness, the tremors in my hands like reduce dramatically. When I have the single point of concentration, the tremors are reduced, but not as much. And I sort of think it's because I'm like efforting to have the single point of concentration. Mm-hmm. I'm not a neurologist, so. Mm-hmm.
I think I can answer that. I'm a speech and language pathologist, and in the limbic system inside the two hemispheres of the brain, the reason, if I'm not mistaken, that people shake is because one of the little organs in there, it's I think the amygdala, has stopped producing enough of whatever it's supposed to produce. And I'm guessing that when you do a focused concentration, which goes towards the pineal and the pituitary right in there, that you try to, you're forcing energy to a place where it's no longer able to produce as well. And so when you do the open, diffuse, kind of softer focus, it doesn't put as much stress on that particular area. And it doesn't demand something that it can't produce.
Okay. Explained. Thank you. You had a question?
I'm not aware of that particular style of meditation. Is it like conscious awareness? That sort of, it's described in Vipassana, same sort of thing?
Yeah, resting and awareness. I mean, different traditions call it different things.
So you just sort of sit and the truck goes by and the truck goes by, beginning, middle, and end, and wait. That sort of thing.
Yes, like if the phenomenon arises, you notice the truck's going by, you don't attach to it. Like, geez, is that a Mack truck? An international harvester?
Is that a woman or a man driving?
Just falls out of awareness. And you're back to like this open awareness again. That's at least my understanding of it. Mm-hmm.
I thought your every word that you said was like so meditative and so enlightened. Every word was very clear that your consciousness had been at that realization.
Thank you.
And I just loved your talk.
Thought
it was fabulous.
So if I could ask you, you said you came to hear me.
Yep.
So do you have a connection with Parkinson's? Or?
I feel like I have a chronic degenerative issue, yes. Not Parkinson's. But I don't really want to.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. I'll talk to you later.
Okay.
Thank you for your wonderful and memorable talk. Much appreciated. I'd like to say one of the takeaways for me is the what were you described, the association with dissociation and gratitude, and the realization between one and another can help to create a different space inside.
So I think there's the common way of thinking is if we're happy, we should be grateful for that. Or we become grateful for that, and the causation might actually be the other way around. It's like if we're grateful, we become happy.
Upside down. We're talking to Zen a lot about turn it upside down.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I was going to say, Mike, I like your rock.
Oh.
Yeah, tell the story about that.
Okay, if you're not aware of Rakusus, this is when you take refuge, you sew your own Rakusu. It's symbolic of the robes that the Buddha wore when he kind of went out on his spiritual path. So I'm a chaplain in the Florida Department of Corrections. And I have a Buddhist group at Lake Correctional up in Claremont. And sometimes we do chukai, this ceremony with the inmates, but of course they're not allowed to sew their own rakusu because they're not allowed to have needles and thread. But they do it anyway. So one inmate took his uniform, cut it up, took the elastic waistband and like pulled it apart and used that for a thread. Took a paper clip, turned it into a needle, sharpened it on the cement, and then sewed me a rakusu.
Oh my God.
So the X is, they have like a white stripe on the sides of their pants. You've probably seen them, guys. Prisoners working on the side of the road, one of the wonderful traditions we have here in Florida. Mm-hmm. I can't wear this into the prison because it's actually state property.
State property.
And did somebody?
Yeah, on the flip side, there's always something written by your teacher. Mm-hmm. In this case, it was the inmate who wrote an inscription. Then when I became an assistant teacher, we get a new rakusu, and Sensei Al up in Melbourne write some stuff on the back. So I use this rakusu for that ceremony rather than the one that I'd made.
Would you share what's...
I just pass it around.
Oh.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks very much. It's been an absolute joy to meet you and to listen to you this morning. Thank you for sharing your experience. I have just come through something, in which case what you shared was very much similar. I don't know that I can feel as grateful as you were to have it and then be happy, which we were just discussing. But I went through a very similar process, very painful. And you reminded me, because I knew at the time that I was really struggling. And I feel as you do about, I don't know that I'd give it up because of where it brought me. You know, and who I am now and the level that it took me to. Because there was a level of surrender that needed to happen. I was in a lot of pain in my mind. And really struggling to accept. I have had Lyme's disease a number of times. And this time it really affected my mind and emotionally and physically, and it really affected me profoundly in a way it hadn't in the past. And there is treatment, which I received, and of course I feel much, much better because I know what to do. but I really appreciated you sharing your experience, and you gave me a lot to think about. Because I too was on my knees in a place of a lot of pain. And a lot of it was my own, because I couldn't accept. I was battling. And I thank you really for sharing your experience. It really was very helpful to me.
Reality is nothing else if not persistent.
And the impermanence, that just, I never thought of it from that perspective. You know, that that also, because there was a lot of projection going on for me about going forward.
Yeah. Thank you. May you have a wonderful experience with Jesus.
Thank you all for being here. Thank you, Mike.
Thank you.
So please remember the Donna basket. Let's show our gratitude to Mike for, it's not that easy. I know I've made that drive hundreds of times, so it's not easy for him to get here. So please support Mike and support our center. The donation box is right next to the door. If anybody wants to join us, are you up for coffee?
Of course.
So we'll go to Kunjani, our regular coffee place, if anybody would like to join us and sit with Mike and get to know him a little better. We hope to get him back really soon. He was only here, I was just this morning trying to talk him into staying and going to the Boys and Girls Club with us. So I was trying to get him, but...
Next time, that sounds wonderful.
So come join us for coffee. Thank you. Anything?
I was just going to say, there's some new people. Maybe we could just go around and... Say our names and where we're from.
Okay.
I'm Andy. I'm from Naples.
I'm Sean. I'm from Naples as well.
Dominique from Naples.
I'm Heidi and I'm from Naples.
Elaine from Naples.
Linda from Bonita Springs.
Sean from Naples.
Barbara from Naples.
Jeannie from Bonita Springs.
Adam, I live here.
Kim from Naples.
Jules from Naples.
Lori from Naples.
Mike Harvey from Melbourne. Actually, Indian Harbor Beach.
Indian
Harbor.
Nice. Thank you.
Come back.